It was a good time, a really great time. I'd just come back from the city. I had some money saved and I got a job at the surf shop, mostly just to get to know people. It wasn't forever. I suppose you could say I was waiting for inspiration to strike. I believe in being open to whatever's out there. What looks accidental might be a gift of the universe. And that summer I met lots of people. Jake and Oren, Andrea and Danny, lots of people. I got fit. I went to parties. It was all good. That night, it was a really nice party. I don't know whose house it was, but everything was just right. There was this big lawn out front, and laid out all over it were hundreds of little tea lights. It was beautiful. That's the word for what it was. And the atmosphere was special too, really peaceful and calm, with this kind of hush, like everyone realised it wasn't just an ordinary evening. Of course, summer nights are cold near the shore, so slowly the party moved into the house. I've never been a centre of attention kind of person, so I took up position on the stairs, me and my guitar. That way little bits of the party could break off and come to me. I looked good, tanned and strong. Girls gathered round. I can't say that I noticed her straight off. Other girls were more dazzling. That's just the way it was. But I did notice her, more and more as darkness fell, and she glowed in that loose, flowing white top she was wearing that looked so good against her dark hair and eyes. She was real skinny, willowy, and she had this cute kind of shyness, like she would drop her hair forward and look out from under it. And she was graceful, really careful and dainty. Anyway, she sat on the floor in the hall, just looking up at me and glowing, like there was just me and her there, like she already loved me. And me? By the end of the night, I wasn't singing to anyone but her. It was like we were already in this bubble, this glowing thing that was just us. Eventually, the guitar got put to one side, and she came up all shy and started asking me where I was from and stuff, like she'd been thinking about what to talk about all night. I had to get past that shyness. I didn't even answer her questions. I just smiled and let her babble. Then I leaned down and kissed her. Her name was Mavis. Yes, it was a crappy name. I mean, who's called Mavis anymore? But it kind of suited her, the way it was kind of old-fashioned and soft-sounding. And she was all coy and apologetic about it. Of course, I teased her about it. Instead of Mavis, I would call her Gertrude, or Norma, or Edelweiss, or Laudanum, or whatever daft old name I could think up. I was good at making her laugh. But that was later. That first night, we went back to her place on my motorbike. Her place was a rented, run-down bungalow at the edge of the wood. It was a full moon. It sounds cheesy now, but that's how it was. We didn't talk. She took me by the hand and led me into the bedroom. I was trying to kiss her, but she made me stop because she had something to show me. She stood in the moonlight with her back to me and peeled off that flowing white top. Then I saw. She was not just skinny, she was skin stretched over bone, and you could see every bone, every single fragile little bone. She reminded me of a sugar sculpture. Ever see one of them? She was as sweet and dainty as spun sugar, and she looked like she could break just as easy. Anyway, she just looked out at me from under that floppy fringe like she was asking a question. I nodded. I didn't move in. We talked about moving in. It was high season and it wasn't easy to find a cheap place. But I didn't move in. I just came to stay. Mavis was happy to have me there. She was alone and not good at being alone, out at that house in the woods by the river with all those flies at dusk. Of course, she wasn't totally alone. She had Max, her kid. He was about 4, and he was okay. But he couldn't fix the plumbing, or put up a shelf, or make love to Mavis in the half-light, running a finger along those spun sugar hip bones as she wriggled and giggled and squirmed with no layers of flesh to stop her feeling everything. We had a good time, me and old Gretchen, sitting on the porch in the evenings, drinking beer and humming songs, as I strummed my guitar with those gentle fingers of mine. I never made her eat. We never talked about it. She liked to cook for me. She was a good cook, a very good cook. Nobody cared as much about food as she did. Anyway, I never asked about it, and she never told about it. But somehow, while she was with me, she started to put a little more skin on those bones, a little more pink in her cheeks. She started to blossom, my little hydrangea. I was good for her. And if it was just me and Doreen on the porch at sunset, then it would have been great. But, of course, it wasn't like that. Nothing ever is. There was all this background stuff, this white noise in the background, and it was getting louder. Max was work, of course. And then there was his father. I heard a lot about his father. Abner Vincente, some kind of Mexican, Israeli greaseball that she had the misfortune to meet travelling. You know what those guys are like, always getting all excitable and shouty about everything and nothing. Guys like that just don't know when to back off. Not that I ever met him. She still let him phone, but he didn't know where she was. She'd run off and stuck a pin in a map. That's how she ended up there. I liked her style. Anyway, he was still burning a torch for old Hildebrand, wanting to come visit her and the little guy. She'd get off the phone after his calls and look all tight in the face, with a little tight mouth like a dog's bum, I used to tell her. One time, I even heard her go get sick, though I just kept strumming, nice and gentle and easy. That's why she liked me, see? I was different. I made a point of answering the phone when it rang, and when it was the greaseball, I would talk real slow and real calm and sound real happy. So there was Max, and there was Abner Vincente, and the season was coming to an end. There was talk of the surf shop closing. Of course, none of that mattered. Mostly, I just looked at Muriel and thought she looked good. That blush, that freshness that wasn't there before. I cared about her, I really did. No one should ever forget that. I did a lot for her. I fixed things, I made love to her, I made her laugh, I made her bloom. And I wanted her to stay well. So, as the evenings got darker and we moved inside, into that empty living room with the rented furniture and the broken toys on the floor and the heating that went straight out the window, I knew something had to change, something had to give. The more I walked the beach and thought about it, the more I saw that it was the way it had to be. I took my time, but still, the time came. We had a beautiful evening. She cooked and I ate. I sang to her and we got giddy on wine. Then I lifted her up like she was made of paper and carried her into the bedroom. We made love and then she lay her head on my chest and fell into a deep, sweet sleep, wrapped around me, warm and clammy like a tired, happy child. I lay there with her silky hair brushing against my lips, feeling her warm, clean breath on my shoulder as her spun sugar rib cage rose and fell and rose and fell. Then, so gently, I rolled her aside, settled the sheet over her, and kissed her forehead, my lovely Myrtle. The kitchen was dark, but also bright, in that strange way you only get when the moon is full, when the edges are clean, and even the mess looked like it had an order to it, like the knives and the papers and the earthenware and everything looked like it was laid there for a reason, like a dressed set. Of course, my bag was already packed. I don't take much with me, ever. My things were ordered for days already, sitting on the edge of my open bag, ready to drop in. But no one would know it, unless they knew how to read my things. Anyway, there was just one thing left to do. So I went over to her old laptop that I was always fixing for her and brought it to life. I opened an email and started to write. I started by saying that I cared about her, really cared. That I understood how she was, that I knew what she needed. What she needed to relax, to eat, to loosen those tight strings she held herself up by, to stop feeling so alone. When she was alone, her head just started to drive her crazy with all this judgment of herself, all this feeling like she had to control, to be a certain way or to be worthless, to be nothing. That's how she was when she was alone. She was scared. She was down on herself. She was hurting herself, making herself tiny because in that nutso mind of her, she thought that would bring her love. And Winifred needed love. She would die without love. That's why I was doing this. For her. After that, I wrote her address and told him to come straight away. It was easy to find Abner Vincente on the internet with a name like that. So after I entered his email address, I pressed send, and my words were flung through time and space all the way to old Abner Vincente to do with as he would. I knew he would. Then I went out into the moonlight and rolled my motorbike away from the house. I shot off into the night, on the road through the woods. I rode with no helmet. I rode with cold air streaking through my brain, adrenaline shooting through my veins like electricity. I rode with no lights. And when that wasn't enough, I gripped the handles and closed my eyes. And Maud? I don't know what happened. I don't look back. It would be wrong for me to look back, to go and find out, to disturb her life. She needed love. That guy wanted her. Everything happens for a reason. That's why things happen. Cards fall where they will, where they're supposed to. I am an agent of the Lord. But last night, I had a dream. I was on my motorbike, on a long, straight road, on a hard and bright sunny day. I was traveling fast, only I was traveling backwards, away from the shore and into the woods. And what was ahead of me was disappearing fast into the distance. It was wrong, all wrong. When I woke up, there was a tear on my cheek and a feeling I didn't like.
That was Spun Sugar by Anne-Marie Harrington, read by Angus Og McAnally and produced by Aoife Ní Cormac. A shortlisted story from the 2014 RTE Radio Francis McManus Short Story Competition. The series of this year's 25 shortlisted stories continues tomorrow with Happiness by Hilary Minch, read by Barbara Ní Cuíve. The shortlisted stories can be heard on the programme website on rte.ie/radio1. The series producer of the Francis McManus Short Story Competition is Cleon Ní Onlúin.